Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl, Holly, and I am back today with another solved murder case for you. I am really excited to share today's case with you guys because it is a doozy, and it takes a very unexpected turn that I personally did not see coming. I think this case is also going to make a lot of people very angry, and I've seen a lot of chatter about one of the key players in this story. I am very curious as to what you guys are going to think about all of the details, so make sure you're in my private Facebook group so we can chat about it. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly podcast discussion group over on Facebook. In there, I post all pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. Before we get into the details of today's case, I do have a Patreon shout out to give this week. Summer might be heating up, but Zoe, my newest Patreon member, is cooler than an airtight alibi. Thank you so much, Zoe, for joining the family and making me feel extra special. If you want to be like the super rad Zoe and join my amazing little true crime family, you can do so at www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. For just $2 a month, you will get every single episode. That's old episodes and all new episodes ad-free. Again, that is www.patreon.com/crimewithholly, or check the link in the description of this episode. Thank you again so much, Zoe. Okay, so with all of that said, let's go ahead and get into the details of today's case. Today's episode is on the murder of Tracy Harris. Tracy Harris was born on March 6, 1968 in Ozark, Alabama. Friends described her as incredibly sweet, hardworking, and painfully shy. Even though she was quiet and reserved, the people around her genuinely loved and respected her. While she was in high school, Tracy met a man named Carl Harris. Tracy was just 16 years old at that time, while Carl was 19. The two fell in love quickly, and during Tracy's senior year of high school, she became pregnant. Wanting to build a life together for their growing little family, they decided to get married. A few months later, they welcomed a baby girl named Carolyn. Carolyn quickly became the center of Tracy's world. Family and friends said she looked just like her mother and carried the same sweet personality. Tracy was deeply devoted to her daughter and worked hard to give her the best life possible. But while Tracy adored being a mother, her relationship with Carl was far more complicated. Their marriage was rocky, to say the least, and it was filled with a lot of tension. And after only a few years together, the couple divorced. Despite officially ending their marriage, they never truly separated. They continued living together under the same roof and even shared the same bedroom. To many people, it seemed like they were trying to work through their problems while technically remaining divorced. Tracy appeared determined to keep her family together, especially for Carolyn's sake. But everything changed on March 7th, 1990, just one day after Tracy's 22nd birthday, when Carl reported her missing. The news immediately alarmed everyone who knew her. Tracy was not the type of person to simply disappear, and there was no chance she would willingly abandon her daughter. Carolyn meant everything to her. Even Carl told others that while he could imagine Tracy eventually leaving him, he could never imagine her leaving Carolyn behind. As word spread throughout the community, volunteers came together to search for Tracy. Tragically, 1 week later, on March 14, 1990, her body was discovered floating in the Choctahatchee River near Woodhams Bridge outside of Ozark. Investigators believed the current carried her body downstream before her body became lodged against a log. Tracy was found naked from the waist up. The medical examiner determined that her official cause of death was drowning. But investigators also discovered marks around her neck consistent with strangulation. Authorities ultimately ruled her death as a homicide. Naturally, investigators began taking a much closer look at Carl. He allowed police into the home he shared with Tracy multiple times as they searched for anything that might explain what had happened to her. At that point, Carl was believed to be the last person to see Tracy alive. That evening, Tracy had finished her shift at a local restaurant where she worked as a waitress. Carl had picked her up from work, took her back home and dropped her off at the house, and then left to work his own shift at a nearby supermarket. And as we know, in so many missing persons cases and homicide cases, investigators often have to start by looking at the people closest to the victim, because statistically, those are often the very people who know more than they're saying. Despite all of those efforts, investigators found nothing inside the home that indicated Carl had harmed Tracy there, or that someone had forced their way in and abducted her. Before Tracy's body was discovered, the river and the surrounding area had actually been searched multiple times. It was a place that Tracy often visited with her friends, so naturally, investigators focused heavily on that location early on. But at the time of those searches, the water levels had reportedly been much higher. Detectives believe that because of that, they were unable to see Tracy's body, which had become caught on a branch in the river. It wasn't until the water eventually receded a week later that she was finally found. And while the area itself wasn't surprising, the location of her body absolutely was. Because according to everyone who knew Tracy, she was terrified of the water. Witness after witness told investigators the exact same thing. Tracy hated the water. She feared it. She would never willingly go into it. Friends explained that while Tracy would sometimes visit the river and maybe dip her toes in at the edge, she would never fully enter the water because she couldn't swim. One of her childhood friends, Selena, recalled a moment from when they were both just 11 years old and they were getting baptized together. Selena said that the second Tracy went under the water, she panicked. She became hysterical. And hear story after story like that, detectives became convinced that this was not an accidental drowning. Now, backing up a bit, as I mentioned earlier, Carl became an early focus of the investigation simply because he was the person closest to Tracy. And even though investigators found no physical evidence inside the home suggesting Tracy had been killed there, authorities still remained skeptical of him. Carl portrayed their marriage and their relationship even after the divorce as a happy one. From the outside, he painted the picture of a loving family and a stable home where they were just trying to work things out. But as detectives dug deeper and conducted more interviews, a very different image of Carl began to emerge. Around 14 people eventually came forward claiming they had witnessed domestic violence between Carl and Tracy. According to those witnesses, Carl had physically abused Tracy on multiple occasions, and some said the beatings had been severe. One of those witnesses was a woman named Dawn Hulbert. At the time, Dawn was engaged to marry a man named Jeff Beasley, and both of them had worked construction alongside Carl. Dawn and Jeff had actually stayed with the Harris family for about a month, and during that time, Dawn and Tracy became very close. Dawn later said that she and Tracy bonded deeply over motherhood. While Tracy was a mother, Dawn was newly pregnant, and she felt Tracy genuinely appreciated having her around because she didn't have many close friends. According to Dawn, that was largely because Carl was extremely controlling. Allegedly, he didn't like Tracy leaving the house without him or spending time with friends. And while staying there, Dawn claims she personally witnessed multiple violent incidents between the couple. In one instance, Tracy had reportedly asked Carl for money to pay like a water bill. And this was something that allegedly made him so mad that she was asking for money. Dawn said Carl wrapped his hands around Tracy's throat and began choking her. Dawn also claimed that Carl made repeated threats to kill Tracy, and according to her, those threats weren't made behind closed doors. They were made openly right in front of her. She said Tracy often confided in her about the struggles within their relationship, but despite everything, Tracy still desperately wanted her family to stay together. She believed that if they could just make it through the rough patches, eventually things would get better. When investigators first asked Dawn Beasley about Carl and what kind of person he was, she didn't hesitate with her response. She told them, quote, "Well, I know he's a rat bastard. He's not good to Tracy," end quote. And Dawn was far from the only person making statements like that. Now, to this very day, Carl has always denied ever putting his hands on Tracy. He maintained that he never abused her, but throughout the town, rumors and stories about the couple's relationship were everywhere. Dawn later said that even while grocery shopping, she would overhear people whispering things like, quote, "Looks like that boy finally killed that girl," end quote. Another one of Carl's friends, a man named Bobby Herring, also came forward with disturbing allegations. According to Bobby, he once witnessed Carl punch Tracy in the face so hard that it knocked her unconscious. Bobby also told investigators that Carl had, at one point, talked about Tracy's $50,000 life insurance policy, allegedly making comments that he could kill her and dump her body in the river and nobody would know. And despite all of these alleged incidents, despite the people who claimed they witnessed the abuse firsthand or heard the threats being made, not a single person ever formally reported it to the police at that time. Tracy herself never reported the abuse either. And as investigators continued digging deeper into Carl's life, they uncovered even more information that only added to the suspicion surrounding him. At the time of Tracy's death, Carl reportedly had a 17-year-old girlfriend. Several witnesses claimed that Carl had openly talked about wanting to marry her, but said he couldn't leave Tracy because he didn't want to have to pay child support. According to investigators, Carl also made strange comments to this teenage girlfriend both before and after Tracy disappeared. Things like, quote, "Come back whenever, Tracy won't be home," end quote. Naturally, those statements raised major red flags. When police questioned Carl about them, he admitted that he did in fact have the girlfriend, but he insisted that anything he had said to her or to anyone else had simply been misunderstood. But at this point, Carl just continued to look worse and worse. From the outside looking in, he seemed like the obvious suspect. You have a man who was allegedly abusive towards his wife. Multiple witnesses claiming they saw violence firsthand. Alleged threats, suspicious comments that made it sound like he knew more than what he was saying. And then on top of that, you have this new relationship with a teenage girlfriend. A girlfriend he reportedly wanted to marry, while also allegedly complaining that he couldn't leave Tracy because he didn't want to pay child support. To many people, it looked like Carl had both the motive and the means to want Tracy dead. Even investigators believed Carl was responsible. The entire community seemed to be waiting for the moment he would finally be arrested. People were convinced it was only a matter of time. But there was one major problem. There was no physical evidence tying Carl directly to Tracy's murder. And without that evidence, or even a confession, there simply wasn't enough for the authorities to move forward with charges. So eventually, the case went cold. After Tracy's murder, little Carolyn was adopted by Tracy's mother, who raised her through adulthood. By all accounts, Carolyn grew up in a very loving and stable home. Her family made sure she always knew who her mother was and how deeply Tracy loved her. Eventually, remaining in Ozark became too painful, and Carolyn and her grandmother relocated to Texas. From that point on, Carolyn reportedly had little to no contact with her father and grew up not wanting a relationship with him. As a little girl, Carolyn always knew that her mother had been murdered, but as she got older, people slowly began telling her more and more about her father and the kind of man they believed he really was. She learned about the alleged abuse, the violence, the stories people had whispered around town for years. And over time, Carolyn came to believe that her father had not been a good man to her mother. When Carolyn was 21 years old, Carl reached out wanting to meet her, and surprisingly, she agreed. The two eventually sat down together, but despite all the questions Carolyn carried with her for years, she never asked him about Tracy. And Carl never brought her up either. But deep down, Carolyn desperately wanted answers. She wanted to understand what had happened to her mother. She wanted to piece together the truth that had haunted her entire life. Then, in 2015, Carolyn's grandmother passed away. She returned to Ozark, Alabama, to bury her grandmother beside Tracy, mother and daughter finally resting next to one another. And being back in Ozark seemed to reignite something inside of Carolyn. While she was there, she started asking questions around town, trying to figure out if anyone knew what really happened to her mother all those years ago. And honestly, you can only imagine the emotions that must have surfaced being back in the very town where her mother's murder remained unsolved for decades. The memories, the rumors, the unanswered questions. At one point, Carolyn even walked into the Ozark Police Department herself to ask investigators about the case. And to her surprise, detectives told her they were actually in the process of reopening the investigation. Honestly, it almost feels like fate. She was in the right place at the right time. After years of silence and a cold case collecting dust, everything suddenly seemed to be aligning at once. And unsurprisingly, when investigators reopened the case, their number one suspect was still Carl Harris. From the very beginning of the reopened investigation, it seemed detectives weren't necessarily looking for a new suspect. Instead, their focus appeared to be on finally building a prosecutable case against Carl. Investigators began tracking down and re-interviewing as many people as they could who had originally been questioned back in 1990, including Carl's 17-year-old girlfriend at the time. They also uncovered several new people who claimed Carl had made incriminating comments over the years. And I will say, some of those alleged statements made Carl look incredibly bad. According to witnesses, Carl would sometimes comment about how stupid the police were, allegedly saying things like he could kill someone and get away with it. Now, Carl has maintained that over the years, he periodically contacted investigators looking for updates in Tracy's case, but the authorities say otherwise. Detectives say that Carl never called demanding answers. He never pressured investigators for progress updates, and they say he never appeared particularly interested in finding out who killed Tracy. A few years after Tracy's murder, Carl eventually packed up and left Ozark altogether. By that point, the town had largely turned against him. People talked about him constantly. Many believed he was guilty, even without an arrest. Carl struggled to find work because nobody wanted to hire him. To many in the community, they believed a murderer was walking freely among them. So eventually, Carl moved to South Carolina in an attempt to start over. There, he worked a variety of jobs, including as a nightclub bouncer, before eventually finding work in construction. He also entered a new relationship and went on to have another child. It seemed like Carl had managed to move on with his life, but what Carl didn't realize was that behind the scenes, investigators were quietly closing in on him. In 2016, Carl Harris was living a completely new life in South Carolina. The life he had left behind in Ozark had seemingly faded into the background, becoming little more than a distant memory. At least until one phone call from investigators brought everything rushing back. At first, Carl was excited to hear from detectives. He believed they might finally have answers. Maybe they were calling to tell him they had identified a new suspect or taken someone into custody for Tracy's murder. But instead, investigators delivered very different news. They told Carl that they were reopening the case and that he was still their prime suspect. 2 weeks later, on September 13th, 2016, more than 26 years after Tracy's murder, officers from the Ozark Police Department traveled to South Carolina and arrested Carl Harris for her murder. But Carl continued to maintain his innocence and made it very clear he was prepared to fight the charges against him. His defense attorney, David Harrison, argued there was absolutely no physical evidence connecting Carl to Tracy's death. Harrison claimed the arrest was politically motivated, saying there had been mounting pressure to solve multiple unsolved murders in the area, and investigators were desperate to finally close a case. When Carolyn learned that her father had been arrested, she admitted that she felt relief that someone was finally being held accountable for her mother's murder. But at the same time, she also wrestled with doubt. Did investigators truly have the right person? Did her father really kill her mother? And if he did, why? Prosecutors Kirk Adams and Jordan Davis argued there wasn't one single motive, but rather a combination of factors that all pointed back to Carl. They felt with the domestic violence relationship and this new 17-year-old girlfriend that Carl had, he wanted Tracy out of his life and didn't want to pay for child support. Their theory was that after finishing his shift at the grocery store, Carl returned home and attacked Tracy, strangling her until she appeared dead. Prosecutors alleged he then placed her body into the trunk of his vehicle, drove to the Choctahatchee River, and dumped her into the water where she ultimately drowned. They further claimed that afterward, Carl picked up Bobby Herring around 9:30 that night in order to establish an alibi for himself. But Carl's defense team argued that the entire narrative was completely fabricated. According to them, the prosecution's timeline simply didn't work. They argued Carl would have had to leave work, drive home, kill Tracy, transport her body 7 miles to the river, dump her body, drive back, and still somehow make it in time to pick up Bobby at 9:30 p.m. And remember, he had left work at 9 p.m., The defense insisted there simply wasn't enough time for all of that to happen. And in an interesting move, Carl's attorney also pointed towards another possible suspect, Bobby Herring himself. Bobby had previously been convicted of raping a woman in a neighboring county, which the defense argued made him worth investigating further. But prosecutors countered that Bobby had an airtight alibi during the time frame they believed Tracy was murdered. And despite the defense's arguments, prosecutors remained convinced that Carl Harris was responsible. As the case moved closer to trial, after delay upon delay, investigators and prosecutors continue revisiting witnesses and reworking the details of the case, trying to strengthen what was ultimately a largely circumstantial prosecution. They even spent time at the river and on the bridge where they believed Carl disposed of Tracy's body, carefully studying the area themselves. Their goal was simple: to fully understand every detail of the case so they could present it convincingly to a jury and secure a conviction for murder. While preparing for trial and revisiting old evidence, prosecutors came across Don Beasley's original statement from 1990 and realized something surprising. Back in 2016, when investigators were building their case and preparing to arrest Carl, Don had never actually been re-interviewed. And that was significant, because Dawn wasn't just someone who had heard rumors about abuse. She claimed she had personally witnessed Carl strangling Tracy, which was especially important considering Tracy had been strangled the night that she was murdered. So investigators began trying to track Dawn down. But by then, decades had passed. Dawn had moved away from Ozark, divorced Jeff Beasley, and changed her life entirely. It took multiple attempts, but eventually prosecutors were finally able to get in contact with her. And when they asked Dawn to testify at trial, she refused. She claimed that she couldn't do it because of work stress and personal reasons. The next day, prosecutors reached out again by text message asking her to reconsider. But once again, Dawn refused. And honestly, this completely blindsided the prosecution. She was supposed to be a star witness. Back in 1990, Dawn had been incredibly vocal about Carl's alleged abuse. She seemed genuinely fearful for Tracy and almost openly pointed fingers at Carl as the person she believed was responsible for her death. So now prosecutors were left wondering, why wouldn't she testify against the man she believed murdered her friend? It just didn't make sense, and prosecutors weren't willing to let go. So they prepared a subpoena forcing Dawn to testify in court. But when Dawn was officially served, prosecutors said she became extremely emotional and dramatic, accusing them of ruining her life. She insisted that she had already given them legitimate reasons why she couldn't testify, but then she revealed what she claimed was the real reason. According to Dawn, prosecutors had the wrong man on trial. And that revelation hit like an absolute bombshell. Prosecutors were stunned. There was no way in their minds that they had it wrong. They believed Dawn was fabricating some outrageous story simply to avoid taking the witness stand. But when they pressed her further, Dawn claimed she knew exactly who murdered Tracy. She said that she had known all along. According to Dawn, the man responsible had confessed to her the very night Tracy was killed. And that man, she claimed, was her now ex-husband, Jeff Beasley. A secret Dawn said she had been carrying for nearly 30 years. Dawn told prosecutors that on the night Tracy was killed, the night before Dawn's very own 21st birthday, she had been asleep at home when Jeff suddenly came in and woke her up. According to Dawn, Jeff told her, quote, "I accidentally hurt her and now she's dead," end quote. Dawn claimed Jeff explained that he had gone over to Carl and Tracy's house looking for Carl, but Carl wasn't home. So instead, he stayed and talked for a while with Tracy. She said Jeff told her he was trying to convince Tracy to leave Carl, but the conversation escalated into an argument that eventually became physical. And according to Jeff's alleged confession, he accidentally hurt Tracy during the fight and she died. Dawn said her immediate reaction was telling Jeff that they needed to go to the police, but according to her, Jeff refused, and instead of going herself, Dawn stayed quiet. She later admitted that she was more afraid of losing the life she wanted than she was focused on seeking justice for Tracy. At the time, Dawn was pregnant. She was preparing to get married, and in her mind, going to police would destroy everything. Her future, her family, and the life she envisioned for herself and her child. She believed her baby deserved a chance at growing up with both a mother and a father, so she said nothing. And this is where I think a lot of people are going to get mad at a key player in this story, like I said earlier. Because according to her own account, she held on to this secret for deeply selfish reasons. Even after her marriage to Jeff ended, even after years passed, she still never came forward. Meanwhile, Tracy's family continued searching for answers. Carolyn grew up without her mother, and she essentially grew up without a father, too. And an innocent man, at least according to Dawn's new story, sat accused of murder for decades. And no matter how much you try to understand Don's reasoning, it's difficult. At least it is for me. Because Dawn was not describing herself as an abused woman trapped in a violent relationship with Jeff. She never said that. She never claimed he had brainwashed her, held her captive, or that she was physically unable to leave. Sure, she did say that later on in the relationship, he got a little bit abusive towards her, but overall, there was nothing serious happening within the relationship that held her back from coming forward. So trying to fully understand why she stayed silent for 30 years is incredibly difficult. Now, Dawn did insist that her original statement about Carl's abuse were truthful. She maintained that Carl had absolutely been verbally and physically abusive toward Tracy, and that she had personally witnessed Carl strangle her years earlier. But what's truly shocking is that back in 1990, investigators never actually interviewed Jeff Beasley at all. They interviewed Dawn, his fiancé at the time, but never Jeff himself. Even though both Jeff and Dawn had lived with Carl and Tracy for an entire month, investigators apparently never thought to separately question him about what he had witnessed within the home. So Jeff's name barely existed, if at all, anywhere in the original reports. And had investigators dug deeper into Jeff back then, they would have discovered he already had a criminal record. When Dawn first met Jeff, he had recently been released from prison after serving 4 years for burglary charges and attempting to escape custody. Then later during their relationship, Jeff was arrested again for burglary and ultimately served another 5 years in prison. And even during those years, when Jeff was incarcerated and physically away from her, Dawn never came forward. Shortly after his release, the couple divorced after 13 years of marriage and 4 children together, and still, Dawn stayed silent. She later admitted she often thought about going to police, but said the fear of destroying her children's lives always stopped her. Dawn also claimed that after the night Jeff confessed, the two of them never discussed it again. They simply acted as though it had never happened. Now, by this point, after hearing everything from Dawn, prosecutors were scrambling. The trial against Carl was days away. I'm talking like 3 days away from starting. And suddenly, this massive new allegation had been dropped into their laps. So investigators began digging deeper into Jeff Beasley. And while reviewing everything, prosecutors realized something chilling. Under the bridge where they believed Tracy's body had been thrown into the river, there was graffiti covering the concrete supports. At first, it had meant absolutely nothing to them. But after hearing Dawn's story, investigators realized that spray painted in large capital letters beneath that very bridge was the name Beasley. And the reason they had never connected it before was because when Dawn originally gave her statement in 1990, she wasn't married yet. Her last name was Hulbert. And in the reports, Jeff was simply referred to as Jeff. Now, investigators have no idea who spray painted the name under the bridge or why it was there, but given everything they had just learned, it was enough to send chills down their spine. Carl's trial was immediately put on hold, and investigators shifted their focus toward Jeff Beasley. Jeff was still living in Ozark at the time and owned a trucking company called Beasley's Transportation. Investigators brought him in for questioning, and Jeff willingly agreed to speak with him, and he even submitted to a polygraph examination. Throughout the interrogation, Jeff repeatedly denied having anything to do with Tracy's murder, even after investigators confronted him with the fact that he had failed his polygraph test. Jeff continued insisting that he was innocent. For nearly 4 hours, detectives pressed him over and over again for answers, and eventually Jeff broke. After hours of denying involvement, Jeff finally said he wanted it to be, quote, done and over with. And for the first time, he was ready to talk. Jeff claimed that he and Tracy had been having an affair, According to him, the two had gone down to the river together because Tracy wanted to discuss leaving Carl and starting a new life with Jeff. Jeff said Tracy wanted him to leave Dawn as well, but he refused. He claimed Tracy became upset and threatened to tell Dawn about the affair herself. Then Jeff described what happened next. He told investigators that while the two of them were wading in the river, Tracy went down and didn't come back up. But detectives immediately questioned him about the injuries found around Tracy's neck, injuries consistent with strangulation. Jeff responded by saying he didn't remember strangling her. He only remembered pushing her under the water and holding her down. He then chillingly added, quote, "But if the autopsy says it, then I guess I did it," end quote. When investigators asked whether Tracy's death had been an accident, Jeff reportedly answered, "Yeah, I would hope." Now, many people found Jeff's story difficult to believe. A lot of people doubted that he and Tracy were truly having an affair at all. Some believed it was far more likely that Jeff made advances towards Tracy. She rejected him, threatened to tell Dawn, and Jeff snapped in a violent rage. And another thing that didn't sit right with many people was Jeff's claim that they were casually wading in the river together. Because by this point, everyone knew Tracy was terrified of water. Still, enough details in Jeff's confession aligned with the evidence investigators had gathered over the years. And ultimately, Jeff Beasley was charged with Tracy's murder. Then on January 13th, 2020, Carl Harris's 55th birthday, and the very day his murder trial was supposed to begin, the charges against him were officially dismissed. When prosecutors called Carolyn to tell her that her father's charges had been dropped and that they had finally obtained a confession from the man responsible for her mother's death, she said she completely broke down emotionally. For the first time in her life, she believed she finally knew who killed her mother. And after spending decades being told her father was responsible, the relief she felt learning that wasn't true was overwhelming. Jeff Beasley eventually pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 30 years in prison. As for Carl, he was overcome with emotion when he learned the charges against him had been dismissed and that another man had finally confessed to the crime. For 30 years, people in Ozark pointed fingers at him, and for 30 years, Carl insisted he was innocent. In 2021, Carl filed a $6 million lawsuit against the city of Ozark, alleging false imprisonment, malicious prosecution, emotional distress, humiliation, pain and suffering, and loss of enjoyment of life. In the lawsuit, Carl also denied ever abusing Tracy and claimed investigators had fabricated information to strengthen their case against him. Ultimately, that lawsuit was dismissed. And despite everything that had happened, Carolyn still does not have a relationship with her father today. According to Carolyn, Carl has never been honest with her about the alleged abuse against her mother. And until he acknowledges that part of the past, she says she has no interest in building a relationship with him. Now, Carl continues to deny ever abusing Tracy. And while we now know he was not responsible for her murder, it's also true that 24 witnesses came forward describing abuse. By many accounts, it was something openly discussed around town back in 1990. Yet Carl has always maintained he was never physically or emotionally abusive towards his wife. And honestly, I don't think we'll ever know the full truth about what happened that night or what life was like leading up to it. Tracy isn't here to tell her side of the story, and I don't believe Jeff Beasley has ever fully told the complete truth either. But at the end of the day, even if we did know every detail, it wouldn't change the outcome. Tracy is still gone, Carolyn still grew up without her wonderful mother, and an entire town spent decades believing the wrong man committed murder. Thankfully, Dawn eventually came forward with what she knew, but personally, I don't believe she ever would have told the truth had she not been subpoenaed and forced to testify under oath. And notably, prosecutors never filed charges against Dawn for withholding information all those years, which understandably remains a sore subject for many people who believe she should have been held accountable in some way. I will say that we truly never know what happens behind closed doors, and maybe Dawn has other reasons why she didn't come forward. I am curious to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on that little tidbit. So make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. Again, in there I share pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I love the opportunity to connect with you guys and chat about the cases that I'm covering and also other cases that you're following. My heart goes out to all who knew and loved Tracy, but especially to her daughter, Carolyn. I know she feels the weight of this loss the most. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode. I cannot wait to hear your guys' thoughts. If you're a Spotify user, please make sure to leave a comment on the episode telling me your thoughts about it all. I appreciate you all so much for listening, and if you're going to CrimeCon this weekend, make sure you find me. I will be there, and I cannot wait to meet you. That is all for now. Always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.